Funny, when you start this up, it says wait. And there was, yeah, I don't do that well. There was a speaker at our, we have a retreat in Central Oregon in June every year, and our speaker last year, one of the two, said that wait is her acronym, W-A-I-T. Why am I talking? Because I've heard a few of you mention you have a little tiny control issues. And I resonate a little with that. And so I just wanted to talk about the fourth and fifth step. But while Terry was reading the traditions, I had a vision in my head of a whole bunch of us running off the end of the dock together and envisioning those concentric circles and how they would converge and move together and we would make a big wake going across the lake. It sounded exciting to me. Let me know if anybody's interested in doing that. I'll watch. So, but what it dawned on me as I was thinking of this is if a bunch of us jumped off the dock together, the circles go in every direction. So some of those circles would collide and kind of cancel each other out. And for me, that's kind of an opportunity in program as we bump into each other, where our personalities collide occasionally. It's a great opportunity for us to do step work and figure out our part in it. And there is no one safer on earth for me to be with than other 12-step people who are working their program. Because if we come to a point of conflict, I'm going to go to my corner and figure out my part, and I'm going to trust that you're going to go to your corner and figure out your part. And yeah, I want to facetiously say, after you apologize, I'll let you know whether you got it right. But the reality is it's almost always I get to apologize. My sponsor, Sue, used to say, change me or change the situation, only this time I want you to change the situation because I'm tired of you changing me. But typically that's who gets changed, is I get changed. Something about my perspective changes. I remember her also talking about how just the tiniest fraction of change in perspective has a massive change in the long run, if you can hang with it long enough. A tiny tweak in my perspective now will have a significant change on my perspective of the world in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. And it'll change the people around me, particularly my children. So I wanted to touch on them just a little bit. I have two boys. My older son is Ben, and he will be 20 on September 2nd. And my younger son is Patrick, he goes by Patch, and he'll be 17 on August 30th. So their birthdays are 3 days apart. Patrick was almost a birthday present for Ben. And Ben is one of those people who doesn't complain, ever. He just doesn't complain. You figure out what went wrong by what he says later. Like, when Patrick turned 2, Ben was just 5, and he came to me and he said, Mom, 2-year-olders are great. They're wonderful. They talk. They don't poop in their diapers all the time. They don't drool on your stuff. Now, he had never complained about not talking, drooling, or pooping in diapers. But it was like, I'm so excited. These things have changed. I was holding out, and they eventually changed. And so he is just an absolute gem in my life. He and I click. We're easy together. His little brother is an opportunity for me to have major growth. His little brother, Patrick, his position on life is don't be direct with me. And it's been his position on life since he was born. For years, we drove from Redmond to Bend, 16 miles round trip each way for work. We lived in Redmond. It was less expensive. We could afford that. And we worked in Bend. So my husband would drive, and the boys would be in the back with me in our little minivan, and Patrick would have a meltdown almost every day in the car. You could predict it. You couldn't prevent it. You could feed him. You could do everything you could think of, but he would have a meltdown on the way home in the car. And I don't know how I found it. Thank you, God. But I discovered that if you talked to his shoes, he'd shut up. He'd say, Patrick's shoes, Patrick, he's not having a good day today. And he'd go. And his shoes would talk back. We'd have a little conversation and he would be quiet. It was so wonderful. But if I would try to nail him down and calm him down, he'd just get madder and madder and madder. And that, as a 17-year-old, still is true with this particular young man. You can't come at him directly. And really, you can with Ben to a lesser degree. I can say, you know, what's happening in your life? Do you have any women around you? What's going on? And he'll give you enough answer to know whether you need to dig a little more. With Patrick, you just have to sit in the room and wait for it to come out. I just sit. And I never watch TV, except when I'm with him. And I watch whatever he wants to watch, within reason. Because things start to come out of his mouth. But if I ask him any questions, it's not going anywhere. Walls up. But if I just sit there and be present, and we get to having little jokes about the TV show, and we do little high fives when things happen that we predict, and we get camaraderie. And if I stay long enough, little pieces of information dribble out over time. It's incredibly helpful as a mom. It's time consuming. I'm kind of into efficiency. But I keep reminding myself, this is as efficient as it gets with this guy. If I come at him directly, he evades. And I had an experience with him this last spring. We were going out to Smith Rock to go hiking. He had a new camera device, and he wanted to use it. He was very excited. So we're driving out. It's about a 35-minute drive from our house, and it's a really challenging hike. And so I'm driving him out there, and we're having a fight, typical us. And I've been telling myself for a long time, you don't like me. You don't like me. I don't even know why you're here. You don't like me. This is what I'm telling myself about my son. You don't like me. You tolerate me because you need me, but you don't like me. And so we're driving down out to Smith Rock, having our little fight, and I looked at him and I said, why are you even in this car? You don't like me. And he looked at me and he said, you have no idea how wrong you are. Huh. What if I'm wrong? What if I'm feeding this crap in my head? What if I'm believing it? What if I'm reinforcing it? What if I'm causing this? What if I'm wrong? So we took our hike, which is always a good thing for me to do when I'm confused. And on the way home, he said something, and he made me laugh. I'm laughing out loud, and I noticed his energy shifted completely. It was like you turned a switch on. He likes making me laugh. Oh, maybe he doesn't hate me. Huh. And now I'm observing more and more, that voice is gone in my head. The he doesn't like me voice is gone in my head. And the only thing true about it was I believed it. So for me, that is, you know, having that kind of reaction to someone, like when he said, you have no idea how wrong you are. That's an opening for me to go, fourth step. Fourth step, what's your part here? Whoa, might this all be you? Wow, that'd be really weird. Because I've believed this for a really long time, that you don't like me, that you hang out because you need me. But you really consider me kind of not very smart, kind of not good enough for you, kind of handy because I'll spend money on you, but I have all these messages in my head that had nothing to do with reality. And until he said that, I didn't see it. So I'm incredibly grateful for that interaction, as painful as it was. So step four for me is all about that introspection, opportunity to step back and look at me through someone else's eyes. That's one of the greatest learning tools I have at the moment. I have changed so much in the last year and a half that even though I had done fourth steps many times, I continue to do them constantly now because I don't have a clue where I am or who I am or which way's up. My life is so disorienting. I went to Peru in November for almost 3 weeks. My husband moved out in December. Also in December, I found a place to place Ben, my older son. Ben has very mild autism spectrum disorder, ADHD, depression and anxiety. And he was not launching. He was not willing to stand on his own 2 feet. He wanted to lean on mom. And I was tired. When he was a senior in high school, his best friend got his girlfriend pregnant. And Ben quit. He's like, my whole future's over. Got his girlfriend pregnant. And it was her second child. She was 17. She had a 2-year-old. So, yeah, Ben was not a happy camper. And this boy was supposed to be his roommate in college. They were going to go through the engineering course at Oregon Tech together. His whole future was based on this boy. and the boy was not available. This is a boy who spent every weekend at our house from second grade until he was a junior in high school. Every weekend. He went to Hawaii with us at least twice. He went to Montana with us at least four times. He was my extra kid, and he fit perfectly with my two sons. And he and my husband have a special relationship. So, ex-husband, sorry, I'm getting used to it. That's a big change. This massive shift happened in Ben's life, and he quit. He would look at me and say, "You are the only motivation in my entire life. I don't care if I graduate. I don't care if I kill my grades. I don't care." And I would try to hold him up, and I would describe it as holding up a marshmallow, a warm marshmallow, and it would sink down in between your fingers and smother you while you held your hands up because there was no resistance. He just didn't care. It was terrifying as a parent because it's like, go, go, stand up, fight, be mad, do something. He just quit. I was taking a ministry course. I just finished a two-year ministry course, and this was the first year, and the month that Ben, the month before Ben graduated, the ministry course topic was all on the difference between love and strength in the context of power. And I was like, I don't get it. Strength I get. Love, how is that powerful? I don't get it. So it seems really obvious now, but at that point, I'm reading this book about the difference between this love and power, love and strength in the context of power, and the value of love. And so I'm kind of steeped in that concept and working my program and praying like crazy. And I realized I got a phone call from Ben's special ed teacher 3 weeks before school got out, 3.5 weeks before school got out. And she said, "I just want you to know, because I respect you, I'm calling to let you know that I'm not helping Ben anymore. He's going to graduate. He's got a C in the class he needs to pass in order to graduate. He's got F's in his other classes. And I have kids who are in worse shape. And I'm done helping him." And I wasn't mad. I was grateful. Thank you for telling me that, because you could have done it and not told me. And that's where we would be at the end of this semester, court semester. And so I sat at my desk and I was saying, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God." I couldn't even think, "Oh my God." And as I'm sitting at my desk, a name comes out of that corner of my desk. Marta Bruner. Marta Bruner. Okay, Ben's kindergarten teacher. Okay. I mean, they have a special bond, but she retired and moved to Arizona. I wonder if I have her number in my phone. So I looked and I did. I had her number in my phone and I called her. And I explained what was happening, and she said, I can't call him tonight, and I can't call him tomorrow night. I'm in Hawaii. I'm at my son's rehearsal dinner tonight. Tomorrow night I'm at the wedding, but Thursday night I can call him." I said, "Great." And Ben got home from school, and I told him, "I know what's up, and you and I are now doing homework every night. I'm going to work all day, and as soon as you get home from school, we're going to do schoolwork till you're caught up." He's like, "Okay, compliant." There's no fight left in the kid. So I sat him down and we started doing homework. We did homework Tuesday night. We did homework Wednesday night. We were just regrouping to get to sitting down for homework, and the phone rang on Thursday night, and I thought, "Oh, Bart is calling. Ben, would you answer the phone for me?" Yeah. 20 minutes later, he's lying on the ground. Tears are running down his cheeks, into his ears. He's hugging the phone. And he says, "Oh, that woman loves me." And I said, "Yeah, she does." And he got up and he shook himself off and he said, "I needed that." And he sat down and he started working. And he didn't stop until he graduated. He got the best GPA he'd ever gotten, ever, in school that semester. And I was like, love. Love shook him loose. I couldn't do it. I helped corral all that energy. But I had such a tiny part of that. It just amazed me. That's, for me, where I'd like to be someday, to be in the position to have that much love for someone that I can just love them right where they are and let them be, and then let them get their feet under them and go, which is what she did for my son. She also came to his graduation, even though she lived in Arizona. She had to be in Oregon the night before for her niece's graduation, so she drove over to his graduation. And he, I mean, it just, he was in heaven. It was so beautiful to see. So he is my special needs son. In December 2013, so just 6 months ago, I once again got to the point of he's not getting a job, he's not really going to school, he's kind of taking a couple classes but not really engaging. I'm tired. I've done this for so long, and I don't want to continue to enable him to do that. I'm not even trying. And so I called his counselor and said, I can't tell the difference between what he can do and what he won't do. I need help. And she said, we've had this conversation before. I said, I know. What was the answer again? She said, you can't tell till he engages. So how do you make him engage? So we got to talking about a company.